Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This hidden camera footage is from inside a meeting of the world's biggest ticket scalpers. CBC went undercover to expose Ticketmaster and its secret scalper program.
In Las Vegas, there is an international ticket scalpers conference. And who's going to be there? Ticketmaster.
Ticketmaster is the world's largest box office, but they're changing the way they sell tickets for the biggest act.
Verified resale tickets. This is the box office Ticketmaster. Most people think Ticketmaster is the box office, like the original face value tickets, but now they're doing resale.
Ticketmaster is now letting scalpers resell on its main site. Fans are furious that events can sell out in minutes, with reams of scalper tickets then quickly reappearing back on Ticketmaster.
I want to know the straight goods on whether Ticketmaster is going to be policing us using our multiple accounts.
No. I have a gentleman who's got over 200 Ticketmaster.com accounts.
How many brokers are using multiple accounts?
I can't think of any of my clients that aren't using multiple. I mean, they have to.
So that's Ticketmaster telling us that they have brokers who have hundreds of Ticketmaster fake accounts, and they don't care that they're using those fake accounts to buy up all the tickets and then repost them for resale, so long as Ticketmaster's getting a cut, of course.
Anyone need tickets, guys? Tickets. Anyone need tickets?
It's the soundtrack outside any busy stadium or arena.
Tickets, guys. Guys, y'all need tickets? What about a big guy? You need some good ones? The difference in a scalper and a broker is a broker can go in, hey, how you doing? A broker will go in there and buy up all the tickets. When I'm a scalper, I stand out here and I buy, sell, and trade.
For example,
I bought this for 20, so I'm going to try to sell it for 50 or 60. And that's a club level seat.
This is ridiculous.
What are we going to do?
Road trip.
You're listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast, part of the Decibel Geek podcast network. I'm out of time.
American by birth and Southern by the grace of God means that everything I do it right. New York and California, you can go and have your fun, but down here I got a list of what I like. Eating tater tots and pussy, sucking Mountain Dew and tip. Kick my grandma in his nutsack and I suck my boss's dick. Fuck my cousin in her asshole before I finish on her tits. Then I shoot my neighbor's cat, I love that redneck shit. You can make your jokes at us and giggle all you want, but my friends and me, man, we don't give a lick. Can read this, then the bitch fell off. That's a sticker on a bike, sure, but it's also a tattoo inked on my dick. Taking pictures of my mama while she's trying to take a shit. Then I'm throwing rocks at cripples and I laugh when they get hit. Pull my picker out at Walmart, then I pop my sister's zit. Checking off my neighbor's dog, I love that redneck shit.
Welcome to Cobras and Fire. My name is Baco, and I am joined by the Home Alone, Loose Cannon. How are you this afternoon?
Feeling pretty relaxed.
You know, nice. We'll get into that in just a second, but every time I introduce you, I always mention like the time of day. Do you think that that adds to the listener? Like, if they're listening at like 3 in the morning, they go, is it afternoon where they are?
Probably. I think people like to always know what the weather is and what time it is at the time of recording. It really, really adds more color to their experience.
Yes, 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 indeed. So, you're a boy all alone this weekend.
I am. To my wife's credit, I have been giving, you know, my stance on camping.
It's yeah, it's word. Stupid.
Yeah, stupid.
You've kind of brought me around to that. I haven't camped since we've been doing this show. Wait, no, that's not true. I did 1 year at Northern Invasion, and that just cemented it. Anyway, carry on.
I would just like the fact that I start influencing the entire camping industry. This just spreads out, and everybody all of a sudden realizes that camping is stupid and that camping was invented by a guy that just had way too much tarp and owned a tarp company and then came up with tents and all this shit just to get rid of it and then turn it into a cottage industry. So I'm still in the point is –
So wait, you could have such an impact – you really want to impact the sales of tents and the number of people that go to like campgrounds are affected by this. Mm-hmm. So if we ever find you just missing, or how do you find somebody missing? If you end up missing and nobody can find you, we should probably be checking Gander Mountains.
Oh yeah,
maybe REI, their corporate headquarters.
Sure, any kind of outdoor company easily has me in their crosshairs from bringing this up. This is something I don't think that anybody's realized until I brought it up. It's going to start. It takes a while for things to shift. But anyway, the point is I have a pass this weekend. So I had both last night, today when we're recording, and then tomorrow pretty much the whole day by myself. So
nice.
Just look, it's a weird thing. Like last night, all of a sudden, I binged like three episodes, all the Stranger Things. I watched Insidious finally for the first time, all the stuff that I normally don't get to do. And anyway.
Solid choices.
Yeah. Very relaxed, you know, is like 3 hours on Pornhub last night. I'm good to go.
Well, I don't know if you're aware, but I've been off the entire week. Well, we're recording on Saturday, so I go back to work in 2 days. And with Amy's new job, we really didn't have any summer vacation time that she could take. So I was a guy home alone pretty much all week. And, I just realized I'm almost out of my second case of beer. I'll probably finish it during this podcast. Baco's been putting down the Coors Lights this week, and keep in mind, I'll tell a story here in a little bit, but that's a good 2 days that I did no drinking, so I'm not the most I've drank in that period of time in my life, but at this stage of my life, it's a sign. I should probably seek some help.
I was just saying, like, you're that guy that, the neighbors you don't see much of, and all of a sudden there's a week where he's just stumbling around his yard and trying to do projects.
Oh, I got tons of shit done. I sweat most of this alcohol up. As you know, I did a lot of cement work this weekend. Fucking 90 degree heat. God, the worst, yards man. Never looked better. The inside of the house is clean as fuck. So I did more than sit around and watch video games, which by the way is a way to burn a few beers. But oh yeah, it was. I was just like, I was a little shocked getting ready for this. I'm like, geez, there's only about seven of these left.
That's always a bad sign. Like when you get a thing of vodka, or whatever, and all of a sudden before the weekend's over, it's almost done, and you're the only person that's been using it.
Yeah,
you're like, oh. I am basically. This is like a Lemmy starter kit. What I've done.
To go back to your neighbors don't see you for long stretches of time, and then suddenly they see you pee four times a day in the alley, like you're waving at them, got no shirt on.
I got that
70s gut going.
I would just like to know that somebody like three houses down is started a whole, like, we have a homeless problem in the neighborhood, and it's just, it's just Baco. He's got a week off.
Yeah.
And he's in the alley again, pissing with his phone in one hand, yelling about the music industry. And
I have heard a lot of Twisted Sister this week, and that recycling container is loaded with beer cans. Baco must have the week off. I'm hearing Rat at 3 p.m.
That's right. Christ, if I hear Ron Keel one more time, I'm fucking calling the cops.
I got a cool Ron Keel story for you coming up. But hey, speaking of beer, why don't we get to this week's beer?
Let's do it.
Before I drink the last seven Coors Lights and really take this show somewhere else.
Yes, today's beer comes from Keith Rockford, one of our Cobras on Fire, and he has gifted us a Goose Island 312 Wheat Ale.
Yeah, go fuck yourself, Keith. Yeah. You know, before we get into this, I do want to implore the audience, anybody that's thinking of contributing, maybe some, I got that, because I've been a pretty good sport. You know, I'm on the record of the kind of beers I don't like. Basically, these the where the recipes come from, mainly from England. All these different ales and stuff of that nature. Buy me a Pilsner. Find a fuck. There is more out there than these wheat ales, pale ales, Hefeweizens, stuff of that nature. Dubaco was solid here, man. I stomach through these nasty things, and it's just broaden your horizons, people. There's lagers, There's Pilsners. There's stuff other than these fucking thick-hearted. And Goose Island actually has an ale I enjoy. They, of course, he gives us two choices, and that's not one of them. But that's enough of me complaining.
But I implore the audience to continue.
Of course you do. Yes. Make sure you buy something that Loose Cannon can't weasel out of buying. But so we got us Goose Island Urban Wheat Ale 312. What is Urban Wheat even? It's like wheat grown next to a freeway, like at some one of those shitty farmers markets in a downtown metropolus where you're growing all this fresh food. It's a community garden that has got the extra scent of exhaust fumes sprinkling over it all day,
like farm to table. Except this is farm with smog and asbestos to table.
So Urban Wheat Ale, I'm sure that's going to get into it. You want to go first, or should I crack
mine? Yeah, I'll go first.
Okay, go for it.
I got a quick Goose Island rant, and that is, I lived around Chicago suburbs for about a decade.
Oh, that's right. This is a Chicago beer, isn't it?
Yeah, so this is one of the first kind of like famous microbreweries that got gobbled up by, I think, Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah, I'll find out while you're reading that off.
Yeah, but it's one of the big ones that got it, and... I will tell you that from someone that this was always on tap in the bars, as soon as they bought it, tasted different. They completely changed it. I'm talking about even the Honkers, this one. So
maybe it's changed since I've had it, but...
it's 100% not a... So don't be fooled. This is not a microbrewery at all. You're just
It says brewed and packaged by Goose Island Beer Company, but it mentions Chicago, Baldwinsville, New York, and of course, Fort Collins, Colorado.
Right. No, it's a.
How many beers have we had from Fort Collins? Fuck.
A lot. They make a lot there. But anyway, so I'm going to taste this. This was a pretty popular one. I haven't had this in just like I was saying, probably 10 years ago as well. So let me just take a taste first. Unless you have
a bottle or
a
can?
I got a bottle. Is there a can?
Yeah, I chose the can because it was 30 cents less. But then I was like, fuck, that's 4 more ounces I got to drink. So that was a bad move. I should have paid the extra 30 cents. Anyway, okay. What do you got? How was it?
Yeah, it is. First off, it's 18 IBUs, so pretty low. It's not too bitter. And, a little bit lemony. I'm not a wheat fan, but I have to, and I can usually only have one of these because it's basically like drinking a loaf of bread with lemon put on top of it. And it definitely is the gassiest of these. I mean, it's just pure gluten. And it's okay. I don't hate it. I gotta tell you, I don't hate it. Like the IPA, we had the choice of this and the IPA, and I'm an IPA snob, but I really hate their IPA. This is better.
All right. Well, let me crack my. Is that it, or can I crack?
Yeah,
my
no, head? That's it. I mean, I don't know why
I'm in such a hurry. I just want to get this over with. Rip the Band-Aid off. Yeah, that does not smell good. Hold on. Oh, this is such a unique flavor. It is shit. It's another one of those that, like, there's just not enough time to scrub it off your tongue, I'm probably going to get a yeast infection from this. That's how it happens, right? Do men get those?
A yeast infection in your mouth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hold on. Well, I got little breadcrumbs are falling out. Yeah, something's going on. It's fermenting on the way down. I can just feel it clog my throat there.
I wonder if the sequel for Deep Throat, the second movie, that she got a yeast infection in her mouth.
Yes, brought to you by Goose Island Honkers Ale or Goose Island 312. All kidding aside, yeah, this is a really it's strong as far as the flavor. It's not something I would want on a hot summer day, which I'm dealing with right now.
No, it's
heavy. It's very heavy. It's maybe more of a winter beer. Although that lemony's hit me a little bit. That kind of gives you that summer feel.
That's what I mean. It's not at least
it's
not
the worst beer I've had. I'm having a little fun at Keith's expense here. And anyway, that's all I got.
Yeah. I got to tell you, it tastes exactly like a beer from Anheuser-Busch I thought would taste. It is Anheuser-Busch, by the way. I just confirmed it. So, okay.
Well, that would be InBev, right?
Check this out. It was bought in 2011. They got a 42% stake in Goose Island that worked out for $38.8 million.
Okay.
So if you're that guy that started that brewery in Chicago, well done. Well done.
Yeah,
so,
and thank you, Keith, for your contribution to the program.
Just want to mention that the best place to get all your Cobras and Fire updates is our brand new sexy-ass site, cobrasandfire.com. You can subscribe to all your podcast apps from there with a click of the button, and you can see the articles that we've written over the years for Decibel Geek. You can buy a badass shirt. You can contribute to the show. It's got everything you'd ever want to know.
You can also do us a solid if you're on Twitter. Make sure you follow us. We're at Cobras Fire. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/CobrasAndFire. And you can find all the links to all of our pages, YouTube, everything, just by going to thecobrasandfire.com. Follow those links and give us a like, thumbs up, rating, whatever you can do. That's a way to help the show out for free.
Everything's fine. All them cats is drinking that wine, drinking that mist of pure delight. Now when they get drunk, they singing all night, drinking wine, spooty ooty, drinking wine, wine, spooty ooty, drinking wine, wine, spooty ooty, drinking wine. Pass that bottle to me. They buying it by the gallon and buying by the quart. Buy a blackberry, you're doing things smart. Knocking out windows and tearing down doors. Drunk, 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 keep a screaming for more. Drinking wine, spooty ooty, drinking wine. Wine, spooty ooty, drinking wine. Wine, spooty ooty, drinking wine. Why don't you pass that bottle to me? Yeah.
Baco, so I called you yesterday, and you were driving back in the middle of somewhere in Minnesota. So where were you coming back from?
I was coming back from corn, and not the band, just fields.
Okay.
I think it was Redwood Falls, Minnesota, population corn. That was my joke on Facebook, if you're
nice.
A friend of me. Yeah, that's a good one. the wife and I, like I said, she had 2 days off this week, and that was Thursday and Friday, and that was so that we could trek our asses to the deep south of Minnesota, deeper than I've been in a long time, Luce.
Like how many hours?
Well, if we did a straight trip, it's about 3.
Damn.
We did it kind of like a little mini vacation because this is basically going to be our big plans for the summer, you know, because I have to put her life on hold to go to Nashville a little later here, spend some time with my bros.
Sure.
But, yeah, so we took kind of a long way down there. It was to go see the Ron Keel Band play at the Redwood Falls County Fair. And I got to tell you, the trip was amazing.
Nice. Did you have a bumper sticker that said, we'll travel 5 hours to see Ron Keel?
I do now. I had to go there to get one, though.
When's the last time you spent that, drove that far for any concert, though?
A few years back, but it was a bigger deal because it was like Rock USA. We were staying there for 3 days. Very similar hotel experience, if people remember that one. although the light switch didn't also shut off the air conditioner. It was a little bit better in that sense. But, yeah, the trip down, we went through basically small-town Minnesota. Yeah, a part of life that I'm fairly familiar with. I mean, I've been a big city boy, as you know, Luz, for the last 20, 30 years or so. But I was, believe it or not, raised on a farm. I think I mentioned it on the show a couple times.
Right.
And so I get these back roads and stuff like that. But thank God for GPS and so many goddamn detours that take you so far out of the way. It's fucking ridiculous. But there's this German town called New Ulm, which is a little bigger than most of the towns we drove through. So we stopped there for lunch. We went into a cafe. It was about 1:38, and we got the dirtiest looks from the first two employees we saw.
Why?
They close at 2 o'clock on a Thursday.
Fuck.
So we were
that
a little
sense.
Late for lunch.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's never a good sign, especially also when the cafe, the only way you can find it was longitude and latitude.
Yeah. Well, the only other restaurant on the downtown street was already closed. they closed it,
too. On a Thursday.
Yeah, and their sign said they closed it, too, but they were gone. And it was clearly like a still operational restaurant, like things weren't boarded up or dusty or anything like that. But yeah, but they said, you know, but the grills are on the I said, oh, I'm sorry. We'll find someplace else. They said, no, the grills are on. It's okay. So by the way, we got our food fast as fuck, which turned out to be not a good thing. But yeah, it turned out the grills weren't on. And so they had to cook our food in frying pans. And I got food poisoning like within about 45 minutes of leaving there.
Oh, good Christ.
Yeah, and it was just like I had the worst hamburger I've ever had in my life, and I've had my dad's cooking. I mean,
you know, you can't really fuck up a hamburger. Just cook it medium.
It was shit meat. I mean, this must have been that stuff that comes in those pink tubes. That's what they use, but it was like they even admitted they didn't prep the food the way they normally do. It was bun burger bun. That was it. I had sauerkraut because it was called the New Ulm burger, which is a German burger. But yeah, the sauerkraut was like just disgustingly mushy and shit. And I don't know. We went to an antique store right next to it right afterwards, and by the time we were out of there, I was clear that something wasn't okay with Baco. And then by the time we did get to Redwood Falls, which is a few hours later, it was clear I was going to be spending some time on a porta potty somewhere.
Fire hole!
Expelling all this. But
can I just jump in real quick, though, Baco?
Yeah.
Okay. So will this now cement – I have always had this thought. I will never eat anywhere that is between 15 minutes to a half hour to close, because that is why you got food poisoning. They gave zero fucks.
You know – yeah, I typically don't. I can't remember the last time I would have. I've worked in restaurants a lot during high school, and we weren't allowed to turn things off until the door was locked. You know what I mean? And so that means your last customer was already in.
Right.
And so it wouldn't have been a problem any place I've ever worked. So I was going to leave, but because she brought like menus and water, now I felt like a dick.
I understand, but you have to realize that's you never know if that person has to go somewhere right at that time and you're delaying his exit.
Well, again, I've worked in restaurants. That shouldn't be your fucking plan.
Well, I know, but my point is you didn't – for you, you didn't get the normal rub. You got the ball sack rub on your burger there, buddy.
Well, I happen to know the chef was a female, I don't know.
Then you got the muffin ruffin.
I got a little squish rubbed on my meat.
That wasn't the squish you were looking for that weekend.
Yeah, not the kind of squish I was hoping for.
No.
But,
oh, my God.
We safely made it to Redwood Falls with my bowels intact. So I did a quick trip around town to get the lay of the land. And after that was done, about 2 minutes later, we checked into the hotel room. And we get to the hotel, and there's like this, I don't know, 8-year-old girl holding a baby outside of it. And the baby's got only diapers on, and it's a fucking 95-degree sun.
Sure.
And I go in, and it says, press zero for help. So I press zero, and she comes in. And she says, they just went to the Ford.
No, I'm saying with the baby in her hand.
With the baby, holding the baby.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I'm like, oh, I'm here to check in. She's like, I'm sorry, they just went to the Ford. I don't know what that means. Who is they? Am I not allowed to check in? I can only read by the body language here that it's a problem right now. So apparently there was a Ford dealer in town that the one person who could help me out was at. And we are checking.
They went to the Ford.
Yep, I was at the Ford. So, and our check-in time was at 4 o'clock, which means, and we were there at 4:08, something like that.
Sure.
That means the time they want you to check in is the time this guy's running personal errands. He has all day to do it, but.
What's the name of this motel, please?
Oh, Smart Choice Inn in Redwood Falls. Yeah, I booked her on booking.com. Across the street was a much nicer looking hotel that if I didn't have to pay for the room to cancel it, I would have done it in a heartbeat.
Sure.
But
I love the name.
Yeah, we get the room, and it's a clean enough room, and the air conditioning works, and the light doesn't shut off the air conditioning. So that was really the only nightmare there. But. We get to the fair, and it is like, I mean, these are old fucking rides. I joked with you that, like, I literally may have ridden on one of these rides when I was 10. I mean, the old light bulbs, and it is just scary as fuck. I posted some pictures on Facebook for people that want to check it out. I think I don't undersell it by saying it was kind of scary. However, the main stage where the band was one of the, it was a perfectly well-built professional structure. I didn't expect that considering the initial thing.
Sure.
And I also shared on the Facebook group one of the most brilliant ideas that I've never heard of before. 50 empty beer cups will give you one free beer. What a way to get your fucking festival cleaned up for free. I mean, come on, yeah. Rock USA.
I just want to be next to the guy that has this just huge stack yeah. of cups that he's holding.
But you know fucking people are going to do it.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. No, I mean, I wouldn't be fucking collecting 50 cups, you know, but maybe 20 years ago. I don't know.
The thing that
you get to the end of the night and you only got 2 tickets and you need 6, but you don't want to buy 20.
The problem with that idea, though, is when you do it, it's like near the end and you bring all those 50 cups up and they go, thank you very much. Sorry, we can't serve you anymore.
No, you got to do it throughout the day. Yeah.
You missed cutoff.
But yeah, you can tie that into all sorts of things. I think it would be a brilliant move by all festivals. I mean, what does a beer cost them, really? You know what I mean? And how much does the cleanup crew? But the main event, of course, the Ron Keel Band. Now, the draw for me was that it was the full band. Ron does occasional shows with Keel. Those are typically on your Monsters of Rock cruises, things of that nature. He does solo shows a lot, and there's one of those coming up in Minnesota here with our boy Corey Harker at Uncontrolled Noise Radio is hosting it.
Oh, cool.
But he doesn't, he kind of ventures, like he's coming to Colorado with the band, I think. You should check him out.
Okay.
But yeah, it's kind of like he ventures out to like he just played some Harley Davidson Fest. So a lot of things like that, but no real like full on tour. It's just not really the reality of the business right now for him. But so just knowing that I was going to get to see this whole band, you know, was kind of an opportunity that I thought was worth 3 hours of my life. As you know, I adore Ron as a human being, but that's more recently thing. I've been a fan of his music for a long time, and that new record is probably the best of his career. And they played, well, first of all, I get there, and Ron is sitting by the side of the stage smoking a cigarette, so he brought Amy and I back to hang with the band while the opening band played. And I got to meet the whole band, and they were great. And we were kind of hanging out. He's like, let's go into this one of the motorhomes they're in because they got air conditioning. And he's, like, getting ready, and one of the guys is, like, half naked, and it's just Amy and I sitting in there. And, you know, if you've been in a motorhome, they're not exactly roomy. You know, I mean, and so I was like, you know, Ron, I kind of feel like we're just kind of in the way here. We can wait out just outside here, but there was a picnic table out by where they were putting the bands. And he's like, no, hang on. I'm just, got to put this on and all that stuff. And keep in mind, this is all happening while, you know, I still haven't properly taken care of all the issues I am now dealing with from my lunch. Then eventually we all went out and the whole band kind of came around and we talked for a little bit. But they went on, and I got to tell you, they put on a full fucking rock show. Their full stage, They played 2 hours and 15 minutes. Now, they didn't play any Keel. I'll touch on that in a second if that's all right. But he played damn near the entire new album, which was fine with me. And then they did a ton of killer, like, rock and roll medleys, like more Southern rock kind of stuff, which really worked, you know, more for the county fair atmosphere. So I'm sure that was by design.
Sure.
It turns out that they are just a killer Southern rock cover band. And just everything. I mean, I think Ron is singing better than he ever has in his life. Now, unlike a certain Bullet Boy, he will acknowledge that his voice sounds different than it did 30 years ago. But I do think it's stronger. You know, I mean, it's aged. It's got a little bit of a tonal difference. But that a lot of that has to do with, I think, he's learned how to sing a little better. And he's kept himself, you know, his vocal cords in great shape. Even though he was drinking natural ice and smoking cool greens or cool menthols.
I got to tell you, that just makes your Coors Light seem classier.
Yeah, by the way, the bass player opened up a cooler just filled with Coors Lights. Yeah, right up my alley.
Ice.
What's that?
No, I'm just saying I'm glad to see people are still buying the ice.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Natty Ice?
Natty Ice.
Oh, my God, this guy's my hero.
Yeah.
Already. We are. I'm starting to become... Ron Keel, can I just talk about him for just a second? Okay. So before we started the show, I'd never heard anything by Keel. I just hadn't. And since your interviews with him and listening to his whole album, which I purchased after your interview with him, out of the fact that he sold it, you know what I mean? Just by talking to him, hearing him, I'm like, I got to check this out in full. Love it. Love his new album. And then I just started looking online about like kind of his history. And there's a lot of stuff that, you know, I have in common with him too, as far as the just general stuff he likes. Like, did you know his favorite James Bond movie is View to a Kill?
Keep it going.
What do you think his favorite Metallica album is? Keel 'em All.
Yeah, I hadn't got there yet, but yes, Keel 'em All. You're focusing a little too much on the last name, because I got to tell you right now, his motorhome was called the Roncord.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he said a fan covered up the C and wrote R.
Oh, that's great. I love it.
Did you have any more?
You know what his favorite Steven Seagal movie is?
I'm guessing at this point it's got to be Hard to Keel.
No, it's Under Siege.
Okay. Oh, man. Yeah, no, he's a funny guy, and he remembers everything. He remembers the show. He remembered my wife's name. He also was a dick and remembered that I, like, tried to book him on Valentine's Day. And he's like, you might want to spend that day with your wife. Because I didn't actually say, are you busy Valentine's Day? I was like, how about Thursday night? And Thursday night was Valentine's Day. So now that my wife was there, he's like, hey, did he tell you about Valentine's Day? You motherfucker. Thanks for bringing that up, Ron. But no, it was all, you know, good fun. But he was the whole band, everybody was super cool to me and Amy. And like I said, I can't. I mean, they just had so many bits. The drummer comes out with a cross and sings Johnny Cash.
Nice.
I mean, the band is just spot on tight. I mean, they just delivered everything. Crystal clear sound too. They got there and they said they sound checked for like 3 hours to get everything dialed in.
Jesus.
So he brought his own crew, brought his own setup, and made sure that the evening sounded great. And I couldn't be more grateful for the first of all, he's just been just a great guest on the show. I love the record. He's been the soundtrack to a lot of low times in my teen years, so I appreciate that. But just to see this kick-ass show made it worth the trip, made it worth the food poisoning. It was a little touch and go on the bus. I may have had a alternate reason to want to get out of that Winnebago, if you know what I mean. The rumblings were there. And Ron's like, no, stay in here. And I'm like, yeah, you know, you hear that gut? Stay in here. So anyway, it was a blast. I'm glad I went. It was worth the trip there, worth the way back. All that good stuff. And, you know, it gives me an excuse to play something off the new album.
Sure. And I'm sure a different version of this will be on this posthumous album, Keeled Over.
What do you think about that, Ron?
No, thanks.
We'll be right back.
cigars. Shoot 'em up movies in a steam tank. Her favorite color's anything but pink. She's sexy. She's tough. Too much ain't never enough. I like girls like me. Women who rock. Wild and free. I'm on the top. Girls like me. That's what it's all about.
The Platinum Cabaret. No hands in your pockets unless you're digging for them dollars. Coming to the stage, Roxy got the long lay. She's sexy and half naked. And as always, all looking, no nookie.
Go to work now. You stay in bed and have yourself a great day.
I took in a show recently, The Glorious Sons and the Struts, but before that, a couple weeks ago, you actually saw it with Stephen Michael out there in Denver, Colorado, correct?
I did, yes. Stephen Michael of the Growing Up Rock podcast and fellow podcaster at Rockin' Pods coming up here this August 9th and 10th in Nashville, along with his co-host, Sonny Pooney.
And they're going to be the ones with the little small city if you're going to Rockin' Pod.
They definitely probably have the biggest setup, right?
Yeah, they had one of the largest ones. They were almost like a record vendor. You know what I mean? It was just like, how many? He's got like 3 8-foot tables, like this giant wall drop.
Sure.
He's got, you know, like 17 microphone clips for, you know, the two guests that would actually go on that program.
That's right.
That's you and me.
So Stephen Michael.
Love you, Stephen. I love you, Stephen.
Last year, he came out here, kind of combined it with his wife's, Jennifer's, business trip out here, which is awesome because he'll probably be coming out here
the lovely Jennifer.
Once a year. Yes, lovely Jennifer.
First time you get to meet her. She's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, very cool. And a good sport about everything because, you know, like a lot of wives, this genre of music is sometimes not their cup of tea. But so we meet up and
I would say like a lot of wives, podcasting isn't their cup of tea because my wife loves the music.
No.
Boy, she thinks like that what I come down here to do is the – she's not critical of it. She doesn't try to stop me, but it's hard to explain sometimes.
No, what I was going to say is I think that at Rockin' Pod, if Baco and I are doing our own little thing, if we're doing a presentation, if that comes to pass, that I think we should just say, like, who here has a stronger marriage as a result of being a podcaster?
Oh, my God. We should do a panel called Stronger Marriages Through Podcasting.
No, I just want to see nobody move their arms. Cause nobody's gonna...
How many people have since moved to an efficiency apartment since starting their own podcast?
Who here is a better father as a result of being a podcaster? Okay, we're 0 for 3. Moving on.
No, I don't think you got my joke then.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're 1 for 3.
Yeah, okay. Well, you have a nice house, you know, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, and a nice big backyard, 2-car garage. Now my wife has that, and I have an efficiency and a cat.
Yeah, and I wasn't aware they still sold air conditioners that stick in the window.
Do you think you still get those beds that stick in the wall?
The Murphy bed.
Is this the living room or the kitchen? It's both.
It's both. That's right.
All right. Anyway, the future of podcasting, people.
Mm-hmm, that's right. So anyway, so fellow
podcaster.
That would
have been great, though, when I asked Eddie Trunk where he thought podcasting was going. He's like, well, I think it's going to result in an uptick in people renting efficiency apartments. divorce attorneys, you know, if you can find a way to streamline divorce, it's a good way to get into.
I got to tell you, right now I'm thinking of starting a side business where Google knows everything about you, you know? You just hone in on anybody that's a podcaster for being a divorce attorney.
Yeah, just Google married podcasters and start counting the days. Like, start sending them flyers.
In case your marriage falls apart because you're a podcaster, here you go.
Or maybe if you want to be shadier, you could, like, actually start hiring people to mess with their lives to make it look like podcasting is destroying their family and the wives take the lead. You got to add some, that's what you got to do. You got to hit the wives. Get them to leave, and then you get the business.
Well, sure. There's all kinds of ways to do it. I mean, I think that basically it's going to be standard when you're going into going to court. They just ask, by the way, my husband is a podcaster. Done. You get 60% of everything.
Ma'am, he's 55 years old, wearing an Out of the Cellar t-shirt, I assumed.
He kept going on and on about Ron Keel. You get the house.
He gets the hot tub with Ron Keel.
Anyway, getting back to this. So Stephen Michael, he basically got here on like a Wednesday or Thursday or whatever before the concert on Friday. And he calls me, and this is his question. Hey, man, I'm bored. What's there to do here in Denver? This is like noon.
Can I do this real quick?
A Thursday.
Huh? Hey, man, this is Stephen. What's there to do in Denver before noon?
Yeah, so he asked me basically, you know, what's there to do? And, you know, I know Stephen Michael from podcasting and doing a show with him here and there, but I don't know him as a
fellow
person, really.
Decibel geeker, too, right?
Yeah. So you know, that's it. So I don't know the man personally. So that's like, what do you want to do? I don't know you. So I'm like, do I tell him about, there's no YNT concert during at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Thursday. I'm aware of it. I'm like,
you guys don't have a Dave and Buster's out there?
He's out there playing Pac-Man, like $1 a shot.
He's at the counter with just a pile of tickets. Get the fanny pack.
No, but I was like, what about, I'm like, okay, you're in Denver. There's a billion things to do. I go, I was like, well, maybe there's like four or five museums, but you don't seem like you're very cultured, so I'm not going to recommend that. But I'm like, you can go hiking, you can go to the mountains, you can do all these things. You know, there's some outdoors things, there's entertainment, there's so many things to do. And he's like, I'll consider it. And then I call him back in like 2 hours. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm getting lunch. It's the same thing as Pooney showing up in your town. He just says, like, hey, it's a Thursday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in your town. What do I do?
Head down to the DMV and look at the mugshots.
just like 1, 2, and 3.
In town too, and we're gonna meet Jennifer and Steven.
So like every social interaction you and I have had in where you were in a different state, you brought a friend that Steven didn't know.
That's correct. Yes.
As you want to do.
One night everything kind of lined up that way. This is when this guy could come and Steven was in town.
He's giving me that song and dance too, Steven. He's just afraid to be alone with you.
Anyway, but as predicted, just so you know, I showed up late and I left early.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You predicted it. He was very satisfied to hear that in the episode before that this went down, and you predicted. But essentially, yeah. So, you know, my whole rant about Denver concerts, they start way too late. Well, in the first time in Denver history, a concert started not only on time, but early. I showed up at the Struts and Glorious Sons show at 7:59, and the last chords of the last Glorious Sun song was ringing out, and they got off the stage. They started at 7:25, got off the stage at 8, and Strutt started at 8:45. I've never seen an opener start any earlier than 8:45. Super pissed. Did not see the Glorious Suns.
The Struts and the Suns, they're basically the only two bands playing on this tour, kind of different than a lot of shows we see. The
right.
show I saw a few weeks later was right on time. We got there about 15 minutes before the Suns took the stage, and your friend was there. We call him Chris, him and his lovely wife, Corrine. Mm-hmm. I got to meet for the first time. Because you kind of helped let us both know that we're going to be there. So we hooked up and kind of watched both shows together. But also there was a listener of the show named Brian. He's a member of the Cobras on Fire group. And he was commenting just to see if I was going to be there, and I was pretty sure I was going to be, but we didn't get tickets until the day of. And I wasn't sure this show was going to sell out, and this is the venue I'd never been to before, but so I really didn't know what to expect. But it was cool. Yeah, he comes. He said he was going to buy me a dog beer if I showed up, but it turned out he bought me one entire beer. A Surly makes a First Avenue beer, and it's actually very good. And probably it is officially my favorite Surly beer. I like the Fury or the Furious or what it was called. Prior to that, but this is better than that. Anyway, so
is it actually sold in stores?
It is locally here. I don't know if they send it out further than the Twin Cities, but
right, understood.
The Palace is ran by First Avenue, which is where this concert was at in St. Paul. Anyway, so they're selling these beers. So I got him one too, and it was kind of nice to meet a listener. But yeah, he drove a little bit of a ways. I want to say he's just on the very outskirts of the Twin Cities. You can correct me if I'm wrong, Brian. I thought we talked about it a little bit. Yeah, he came by himself because I think the wife was away or something like that, and he just figured, what the hell? Maybe I get a chance to bump into Baco. So it was really cool meeting you, Brian. Thanks for the positive feedback. Thank you for the beer. And yeah, the Suns. It was still a great show, but easily my least favorite. They played two new songs. We should announce that the Suns have an album coming out now, September 13th. I thought that kind of came out of the blue. And they played.
But didn't he come there because he didn't know about the Glorious Suns before he heard the show?
Well, yeah, he said that he got turned on to
right.
the Glorious Suns
because
of our show.
That's what I would love to hear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. If we're getting people exposed to music and they're checking it out, whether it's old or new, like the Suns, we love to hear that. It's nice to know that we're, like I said, we've mentioned it before, that we're not talking to a wall. Right. That there are actually people turning ears on and giving two shits about what we have to say. So yeah, Brian, thanks for that. Probably more than anything, but. Yeah, and got to talk to Chris for a little bit, and but his wife was really getting antsy by the end of the struts. It turned. She said apparently she's not a big rock concert person, but like I said, I don't mean that as a criticism. It just sounded like it was like this was a little bit more than she thought she wanted to get into. But your boy Chris, he was. There's no way he could have a better time than he was having that night.
it's because he never goes out.
Well, the struts are not a band that I like as much as him. And they're fine. I enjoyed the show. My wife, Amy, loves them a lot. That's worth it alone, that a band like that. She likes a band like that, that I can at least, you know, sit through and stuff. They have some songs I like, but for the most part, it droned on for me a little bit too, Corrine, but not for people who were there who loved them. And that's Chris and my wife. But
So the Struts for me is kind of the same thing. I liked about four or five songs off the first album. Second album, I completely dismissed, way overproduced. And, you know, Glorious is bringing me into the show, but, and I've seen them before, like 4 years ago at 150, maybe max bar, and they killed it live wise. Now, I will tell you this much. I was super pissed that I met, that I was such an idiot to miss the Glorious Suns, thinking it was just like a normal Denver show.
Sure.
And I was so mad at the point where I was just like, I'm not even going to enjoy the show because I'm angry, but they brought it enough to bring my mood up for the next like hour and a half. They are ridiculously, over the top as far as performance. They like basically
sure, but
like
I like that part
cheerleaders. I know, that's what I mean, like there are cheerleaders, a lot of people you know, moving arms and stuff like that, but the
it sounds great
about
too.
It is, yeah, sound great. The the whole Freddie Mercury thing, did he play Don't Stop Me Now as an encore?
Not that I recall.
Wow, it was just on the piano only, played the song that you and I kind of rediscovered from Queen, and just completely nailed the fact that pitch perfect, amazing version of that for the encore too.
If that guy looked like Stephen Michael, no one would be comparing him to Freddie Mercury. I stand by that. He's close, but not spot on. And it's the fact that he basically cuts his hair like a certain era of him and kind of has that facial.
He emulates him as far as his look, but he is a Freddie Mercury part two. I'm going to stand by that. That would be our disagreement.
I'm sorry, Freddie Mercury could write songs.
Exactly my point. Oh yeah, no. That's my point. Is that there was like five songs that I was like, man, these are great songs, and I went back to their newest album because I'm like, are these the ones I just missed? And they are completely different. The pacing, the everything. Struts need to come out with a live album. I will enjoy it a lot more than their studio stuff. It is the difference between the like hearing Deuce and then hearing Deuce on the original Kiss album. The pacing and the Cold Gin.
I get what I'm saying?
Just it's a different animal. So if you want to hear the full story of that weekend where I also turns out that I am more offensive than you, per Jennifer. She thinks you're less offensive in person.
Oh, well, as do most people.
Yeah, so check out the Growing Up Rock podcast. It's Freedom Fest Weekend is the bonus episode.
Come heavy or don't come at all. You leave your peace in on, that's your call. It never paid to be merciful. Come heavy or don't come at all. Come heavy or don't come at all. Been here before, I watched a better man fall. I smell the beer on you, boy. Come heavy or don't come at all. I will put you down. I will put you down. I will put you down. For king and for country. I will put you down. I will put you down. It never paid to be merciful. Come have me on.
Now, you told me that you got tickets for the Gloria Sons and Struts the day before the show. Do you have any issues?
No. He walked up to the box office and gave him money.
Huh. Okay.
My only concern was that I thought it might be sold out. But yeah, no extra fees. $29, baby.
Well, can I tell you my tale?
I got a feeling it might be a little more convoluted.
I waited until about a week before the show because here there is a deal where between 10 and 3 on a Saturday – at a couple of these venues, like the one they're going to be at, you can actually go there and buy the tickets right there without any fees, like you're talking about, right?
Correct. That's my preferred method.
Exactly. So I did so, made a special trip out to the theater, and they said, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Cannon, but the Struts and Gloria Sons are sold out. I'm like, motherfucker.
So this is at the physical location?
Yes.
To a show that you went to. This is going to get good.
Mm-hmm. It's sold out. There's no tickets left. And I was like, son of a bitch, because, you know, I had my buddy coming in and meeting up with Steven. I'm like, this is not a good situation. And I instantly went in my car and I'm like, this is bullshit. No way. So I started looking and I'm like, because they do play Sawed Off Shotgun a lot around here, too. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, maybe this is actually a reality. So I looked on there. These were $30 tickets. The cheapest that was on there was a StubHub for like $60 and all this stuff like that. And I kept looking on Craigslist to see if I could possibly be raped also in getting my tickets for a discount.
Oh, nice.
And right. So then I found this one on the weekend. I'm like, son of a bitch, I waited too long and I'm pissed because I was trying to be cheap and save like $10 on these fees. So then I started looking on Monday and Tuesday, same thing, sold out. Finally found this person on Craigslist to give them to me at face value, but they were like a half hour away. And I was like, right before I decided to go on that little journey to get those tickets, I said, let me go back to Ticketmaster real quick. So I went back there, boom. Nothing but tickets again. One sold out, bought them that way, and then got the tickets.
Well, the cleaning crew found some that had fell behind a desk.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So anyway, that's my story.
And we found a thumb drive with a bunch of PDFs in it.
So the time that all of a sudden that was the weekend that you didn't have to pay for service fees, dynamic pricing. I don't know what you want to talk about next, but I'm guessing it transitions well.
Well, yeah, of course, we both know where we were leading in with this. And that's the recent news that cemented something we got into, I don't know, it was a few episodes back, maybe a couple months. I'm not exactly sure which one it was, but we talked about the dynamic pricing. And I even talked about one of the concerts that are involved here. But it turns out Metallica is involved, as are other artists. They just don't really mention too much. They don't mention others specifically. They're involved in basically moving tickets away from actually being available to the public into a resale secondary market, and then they get a cut of that.
Hold on a second. Are you telling me that the artists are actually involved?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I know. I've definitely speculated it before. I've never had any evidence, but the one that really got my ire was that when Metallica played the brand new football stadium at the time, yep. U.S. Bank Stadium here in Minneapolis. The tickets went on sale, and they were gone in like 10 minutes. And it just seemed and then they were immediately available on StubHub and Ticket King, things of those secondary natures. And to the
– what's the seating capacity roughly there?
It had to be at least 60,000 people.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe 50. I think it's like 66 for a full football game. You might lose some of that. But the stage is at an area where there isn't a lot of seats behind it. So you probably don't lose too much, and you get the whole.
In other words, a shitload of seats to go in 10 minutes.
Exactly. And look, it's happened, but it really hasn't.
Right.
You know, and the thing is, like, if you go, like, look for, like any concert you want to go to, just type in Metallica tickets, you'll get all these websites that are all offering them for sale, and they'll all have kind of official names, like the, some of them will actually say Ticketmaster, and it won't be Ticketmaster. You know, it's
Flash just, seats.
It's all this secondary shit that we need to get rid of, but let's get into the story a little bit on how this turned out. Well, that show that in Minneapolis that Metallica played that I mentioned is brought up in here as a show that happened at. But Metallica apparently didn't have any involvement in it, but it must have piqued their interest because a representative of them reached out to Live Nation to see about basically, can we have, I don't know, there's some, it was like 88,000 tickets of a whole tour or something like that that they wanted for themselves to sell on the secondary market.
Now, and, could I jump in here real quick before you go further?
Yeah.
About the Live Nation? Okay, so I believe this is relevant in a point you'll bring up later, and that is that this entire tour, they did not use local promoters. They decided to sign a deal with Live Nation to take care of all the tour dates.
Yeah, correct? Coincidentally, Live Nation had brought up the promoter they were using in their last tour.
Right.
So
called Frank Productions. So they did that, and they inked a deal, before going to the ticket parts, that Metallica, from this tour, would receive 95% of the gross. Not the net, 95% of the gross, which ended up making $111 million, so that's roughly $105 and change going directly to the Metallica Corporation. So
no, not, now that part, not that rare. You can thank Led Zeppelin for that. Going back to their manager was the first one to kind of spearhead this idea that the artist should control a bulk of the money. You're just a promoter. I think 90% is probably a little more common. Yeah, they got 90 on one of their once Zeppelin blew up, he like pushed for 80 or 90%, and that was what 40 years ago. So I got to believe Taylor Swift, Kanye West, Beyonce, they're not even putting on a pair of shoes for less than 90%.
Okay, but with that said, too, I believe that
that's a lot of money. That's a big percentage.
So at first, it said to me, like, why would Live Nation do this for like $6 million or whatever the difference is? Of the percentage of the $111 million, and that is because all those fees are usually about 30% of the ticket price. So let's just call it that's $30 million in fees plus that $6 million slice. So this tour is going to make them at least $36 million, Live Nation.
Correct. And as we're about to find out, they're also getting a piece of the secondary market. They always were.
Right.
They've been involved in it and instrumental in making it legal and just convoluting the whole process to make it harder to figure out where the money's actually going.
Break it down.
Let me break it down this way. Let's say there's 1,000 tickets, and they're going to be sold to the public. And so Metallica would get 95% of that $1,000. Now, so those tickets are being purchased, and then so Metallica gets that cut, and then they're resold on a secondary market, which, of course, has a price increase. Through this deal, Metallica would get 40% of that. Live Nation would get 40%, and the dude who brokered it got 12, and some other guy got 8. Now, the percentages are somewhat debated in this piece, but not by much. And the idea that, like, all the parties involved just continue to get more money, it just shows you, like, how fucked this whole process is. And people can bitch about greed, and I get all that. You know what? It's difficult for me to defend anybody, and I'm not going to. You have enough money if you're Metallica. You fucking should anyway. Again, Tommy Lee might be a couple bad investments away from becoming Grimace, but he should have enough money.
Agreed.
You know, but that the bad financial decisions aside, there's plenty of money here for everybody, and to still offer a product that doesn't cost the consumer $100.
But let's just talk about that for a second, though, is that in this specific situation, 88,000 tickets approximately,
yeah,
Metallica is going to get paid twice on those tickets.
Yeah, correct? And but the one thing that I didn't get to that I think is important here, the only way they could do this was to basically sell these tickets to another company that they kind of do this all the time as is those like a fan club pre-sales. I've always wondered why the pre-sales even existed. They make no fucking sense. You can get the pre-sale code without being a member anywhere. They sell out usually in 10 seconds. They're never premium seats. It's just there's really no benefit other than like there must be something shady going on. Turns out there's something fucking shady going on. And this has to be more common than you and I even know. More common than this one instance. I mean, it just has to be basically business as usual. That there is no industry that is more about fucking people over than music. I was talking to our friend Bryn Ahrens on the sidewalk outside my house, and he said, if the music industry was a, the reason it's never been sold as a stock is because it's a horrible investment.
You know, the thing, but going back to this, before you even go more into this, we'll peel off some more layers of the onion, because this is the stuff that gets basically when I think you and I both read this article, we look like the heat miser with her head on fire, you know, little flame shooting off the top. But really, it didn't, though.
Yeah, the police got called to my house. I thought I got in a domestic dispute. Turned out I was just yelling at my laptop.
but really, did it? It's almost like the that we're desensitized from all these things.
Yeah, that's a more accurate description. I'm like, of course.
Yeah.
If anything, I maybe felt a little guiltily happy. Like, I fucking knew it! All those motherfuckers like for decades have been saying, you can't blame the bands. The fuck I can't! Kid Rock literally did an entire tour for $25. And there were no fucking add-on fees. And there was none of this bullshit going on. If we had listened to Pearl Jam.
Well, no, it's all that stuff. Like, when you see
they're just greedy.
Okay. Right. That's what it did. I remember when Kid Rock did that years ago. It was like a $20 or $25 concert.
Something like that.
All tickets the same price and $5 beers. And the places are packed. And still people made fucking money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It turns out you can fucking... Yeah. I've never understood that. Like I read in Duff McKagan's book that tours were a loss leader. And I'm like, I went to that tour you're talking about, Duff. There were 40 fucking thousand people that all paid at least $20,000. How did you not make any money? Well, it turns out because they were late and had to pay union fees. But anyway!
But if you show
not
up on
show
time...
Not like 2 hours late!
You know what? I guarantee the Glorious Sons and Struts are the most profitable concert if it has to do with time of people being there.
Especially when you look at their stage props, which are pretty cool looking, but it's a pretty minimal stage, man. It's clean.
Yeah.
Clean, baby! Yeah, I will say this. The Sons need a little help setting up how to arrange a set list. But
I will tell you also that both of them sounded great, and there's no orange amps, so yeah, I don't know.
What do you do? I'd go. There's no explanation. They must have been.
There really isn't.
Like those ones that were on stage when I saw a band that sounded like shit. They just were props. This is the opposite with
empty.
Them. They're actually playing through them. They're just off stage.
Right. It just depends.
Yeah. But back to this nonsense.
Back to the scam that everybody already knows has been going on, but is laid out in detail. 88,000 tickets, double dipping, percentages, people on planes, they're complicit.
Technically not illegal either. That's what I love about it.
What?
Technically, they didn't break any laws. There's nothing illegal about it. It's just a shitty fucking thing to do.
Yeah, right.
I actually have some solutions. I don't know if we're there yet.
You know what? Before you go into that, too, the thing that kind of really pisses me off about that from being Metallica is, and you brought up a good point on this a lot of times. You know, we talk about our favorite bands sometimes not going the extra mile in different things, like Kiss, kind of disappointing. Metallica still, whatever you think about them, has done that thing kind of for the fans where they do the deep
cuts.
They do the cool stuff. They put out tons of free pro shot material of all their concerts. They vary their set lists. But at the same time, they are still doing what the big pop stars do and fucking over the people with this kind of the shenanigans.
Yeah, welcome to Justin Bieberland, Metallica. Good for you. Go fuck yourselves.
Right?
Yeah, I had probably already seen my last Metallica concert. This just cements it. I don't go to a lot of these big arena shows anyway, largely because I don't care for the environment like I used to. I still enjoy a good festival, but I don't really want to go sit inside a Target Center for 3 hours and watch live music. I'd rather go to a club.
That's kind of how it was, too. Like, this week, I gave up a concert I was pretty much going to go to. It was Shinedown, Bad Flower.
I thought you were
going to
say Chevelle.
No. Not Chevelle. But Shinedown, Bad Flower, which I thought was a cool combo. And there's also a funny name band that's actually pretty good called Dinosaur Pileup that was opening as well. So I was going to go to this, but it was $55 for general admission. So I was like, oh, that's a little sketchy. But at least it's GA, so you're on the floor. So I'm like, that's kind of cool. But then it was $25 in fees. I am not going to the concert for $80 and then going to a stadium-type show. So it was right at that dividing line where they are keeping fans away. I would have done that on a Wednesday, though. Not going to do that. You know what I mean?
Well, this sounds like the perfect way for me to offer how we actually deal with this stuff.
Please.
All right. First thing we had to do, no more secondary markets. I have a lot more respect and integrity in the guy standing on the street working outside the lines of the law, you know, going, need tickets, you need tickets, got tickets, got tickets. It's a one-to-one transaction. I don't even want a loophole available. I don't want it to be legal for me to sell you a ticket. Boom, it's done. It's either a face value exchange or nothing. Enough. Just, I'm sorry, but Ticketmaster, what's the other one? StubHub? Those are the two big ones, right? Ticketmaster has their own secondary thing, which they just got busted actually just funneling tickets into and reselling on a secondary market. StubHub, Ticket King. Your entire existence is based, your business model is, let's fuck over people because we can. So I'm sorry that I just don't, I have zero problem making that business illegal. You want to do it, you have to do it outside the law. At least there's some control there. 48 hours, the first 48 on any event, place of purchase only. You have to get in a fucking line. I'm done with this nonsense. If you're not that committed, then you just don't get to go, and you can wait and do the online purchasing after the 48 hours. That would help out.
And I'm okay with that for the first 48 hours.
Yeah, the first 48 hours, every seat is available. It has to be verified somehow that basically the best seats in the house, every fucking ticket in the room is available. No setting aside pretty people seats for some kind of side deal. Again, do that shit under the table. Do it outside the realm of the law. At least make it fucking wrong. And then the last thing I would say, and this is probably the most important thing, I might even concede those first 2 points if they could just do this. The price of the ticket is the price of the ticket. If you can add all the fucking fees in the world you want to, but you don't get to break it out afterwards. You get to say, if I'm looking to see how much it's going to cost to see that show you just saw, it said $85. It didn't say $55. I go through the process and I see location fee, print fee, local tax fee. So, you know, all this nonsense. No, it just has to, all of those fees have to be bundled into one number.
Right. Why is that not? Yeah. Why is it that difficult? I don't need to know. Don't tell me. Give me the price. When you get, it's called shopping. I do a bunch of stuff online as far as e-commerce. It's called shopping cart abandonment. You get to the final stage. You've entered all your info, and that says, by the way, it's an extra $20 for shipping. We didn't tell you that earlier. No.
Exactly. And that what they're hoping is, and apparently it must work because they continue to do it.
Because you're exhausted.
It took you so fucking long to get. You've already entered all 16 digits of your card number, the expiration date, and the code on the back. You've entered in your shipping address. And why do you even have to pay extra money for them to email it to you? It's like, you'll mail it to me for free. But they know that, like, you like that instant satisfaction of knowing you have it. So they're charging you for that, even though they're profiting. I mean, someone actually has to put that, or a machine anyway, that they have to plug in and pay for the electricity and push a button, has to stuff it into an envelope and mail it to you. Jesus Christ, the whole thing is so easily fixed. It's one of the simplest problems we have, and yet we just can't get everybody. I mean, I'm really irritated flat out. I'm calling out the bands, the musicians. Stop playing the fucking game.
That's where it is. That's where the buck stops. If you want to stop fucking over your fans, mm-hmm. you need to put your foot down a little bit. I get the fact that your incomes aren't as much. Maybe you have to do some shady business. I would expect this not from Metallica, but from struggling artists. That somebody like a little hustler on the side says, here's how we can sell an extra 200 tickets.
Well, imagine Lars Ulrich going out into the parking lot and seeing a guy selling bootleg T-shirts for $10 and saying, I'll tell you what, you charge 15, give me half, and we're cool. That's what they're fucking doing. They are going up to that guy saying, raise the price, $5, give me half of that, and then you get to keep doing this.
Can I give you one other thing that I think would fix
artist's
income? And this is on the positive end. I have never understood why on the same date, now that it's Friday, used to be Tuesday, but now it's Friday Universal, that a band that you like on a Friday, if they have a new album, it is available on iTunes, the store, and streaming all on the same day. If you delay that even a week, I say 2 weeks, but if you delay the actual streaming version of it a week, the real fans will purchase your, that want to have it that day, will pre-order your album, either physical
Brilliant.
Or digital.
I'm on board.
Yes?
Yep.
Why? Why not just delay it one fucking week? You could make more sales.
No idea. I'm with you. So, listeners, stop buying the tickets with all the fees. Vote with your wallet, bitches. It'll change.
You know what, though?
Unless it's a band you really like, then you got to go.
I think I cracked the code on this whole scam.
All right.
You know what it is?
I haven't heard it yet.
It's a profit deal.
It's a profit deal.
Oh, Baco, I am angry at Metallica. I'm angry at the whole machine of the music industry. I'm about to pass out in my own filth on the couch. Let's get out of here.
I am with you. You ready to get out of here?
Oh, fuck yes. Rock's not dead.
It's hiding in the ticket fees. Are you all set?
Yeah.
You done being pissy with me?
I'm not being pissy. I'm just being in a...
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.